Today, I was thinking of talking about compassion. We can have compassion for the person involved in something there. I was, first of all, maybe talking about what is compassion. And there's a Pali word for it, it's a karuna. Pali is the language in which some of the Buddhist scriptures were written down in. And it's one of the four Brahmaviharas, so sublime states of mind. And the others are loving kindness or metta, sympathetic joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha. And I've talked about the other three before. I'm waiting a little bit for the sound. So I talked a little bit about the other three. So I thought I'll give a little bit of a recap of all four Brahmaviharas, just very briefly. Each of them comes up in different situations, basically. So they're this heart respond to these different situations, like loving kindness. The first one comes up when it's just a general social situation, and other people are involved. It's it can also be for ourselves, but it's not super special. Nothing super special is going on. It's just kind of normal. Compassion arises in situations where there's suffering, difficulty is happening. So if we suffer ourselves, or if other people suffer, or we can even have compassion for the whole planet suffering, and it's kind of a warm feeling of kindness and love and a sense of caring, and it often goes along with this desire to alleviate the suffering. That's kind of part of compassion often. And then sympathetic joy, mudita, can arise when there's joy present, whether it's in our own lives or in other people's lives. When someone else is doing well, when they their life is just going well, or they have a specific situation that is going well for them, we can feel sympathetic joy. We can feel joy for them. And then equanimity is when none of the other Brahmaviharas apply, and specifically it is about balance and staying balanced in whatever situation arises. So whether there's adversity or excitement, we just basically stay in balance with the vicissitudes of life, as they're called, the worldly winds, blame and fame, and pleasant and unpleasant, and things like that. So we're not really drawn in the direction of aversion and resistance, and also not in the direction of desire and attachment. So in this way, compassion is placed in this whole of the four Brahmaviharas here. It is a specific Brahmavihara that comes up in certain situations, especially with suffering. So it is a state of heart and mind, where we want ourselves or others to be free from suffering, difficulties, discomfort. And we want to alleviate that suffering if it is possible and appropriate. So it has this clear action component to it. For example, if we see someone tripping in the street, compassion might arise to help them, get back on their feet. But sometimes it might not be so appropriate or desirable to actually take action. For example, if you see a bird eating a worm, then compassion might arise for the worm because they're being eaten. But if we're gonna save the worm from the bird's mouth, then the bird doesn't have any food. And then maybe this bird has young, and then they can't feed their young. So we're actually contributing to suffering in a way if we do that. So it's not always appropriate, like to in that kind of situation. Sometimes it's better to not do anything, but there's also situations where it is appropriate to handle or to act, but it's not practical. It's like when we see like there's a flood somewhere on the other side of the world, then you know it's usually not as practical to jump in a plane and help people there. But of course we can, for example, transfer money to a charity or something like that, but just as an example. Yeah, so this is kind of about this balance. And there's some wisdom into not taking all of the responsibility for the whole world on our shoulders. And Jack Kornfield has a really beautiful quote about that. He says, just as our compassionate heart can be touched by the sorrows of the world, we must also remember that it is not our responsibility to fix all the brokenness of the world, only to fix what we can. Otherwise, we become grandiose, as if we were put here to be a savior of the humanity around us. So, we can do what we can, you know, within reason. And that's, you know, that's a healthier way to deal with whatever, you know, is ever happening in the world. And it ensures that we do not get burned out. Because often you might think like, oh, there's so little I can do. But that is true. And we kind of get caught up in that. Instead of acknowledging that there is little we can do. So in that way, we can stay balanced. We guard our own boundaries and yeah, stay balanced. And in this way, in guarding our own boundaries, we actually practice compassion for ourselves, right? A very supportive condition for compassion to arise is the presence of wisdom. Sometimes it is said that wisdom and compassion are two wings of the same bird. And we need both wings to fly properly, you know, to move forward on our path. We need both wings. And wisdom means that we see things clearly. We see what leads to suffering and what leads to happiness. How can we move more towards happiness and less towards suffering? Knowing what contributes to wholesomeness, what contributes to unwholesomeness. So, seeing things clearly is really needed if we want to practice compassion. And often we are kind of in the insight tradition emphasizing this seeing clearly, this wisdom. Developing insight practice. And we're less focused on the compassion part or, you know, the Brahmavihara part. But compassion and wisdom can really live without each other. So, yeah, we'll really need to cultivate both, basically. So compassion, supported by wisdom, enables us to face our own suffering and the suffering of others. So wisdom allows us to face the suffering because we see that it actually is wholesome to face our suffering and the suffering of others without hiding, without suppressing, but to open to it. And that might sound a little kind of, you know, hard to do, and like why would we do that? Because it's so painful. Right, to open to suffering and can really feel uncomfortable. But it is actually when we start to practice this, and we can practice, you know, start with small things, small bits of suffering. Suffering sounds maybe a little heavy, but small bits of difficulty that we have in our lives, like the irritation if a stoplight just turns yellow right in front of us, or, you know, that kind of little bits we can open to, oh yeah, this feels like irritation, it feels unpleasant. Opening to these little bits, little tiny sufferings that we experience. And then start to gradually progress to opening to maybe bigger things. And in that way, we are really training ourselves to be resilient. And there's kind of this vulnerability and also tolerance that happens when we do that. And this really reduces this tendency to suppress the difficulties, to, you know, to not feel them, to really push them away. And so it sounds kind of contradictory, but opening to it in the long run will help us to more happiness, to open to more happiness as well. And this is like seeing that is wisdom, seeing that actually opening to suffering is beneficial, is a way of, yeah, being wise. And of course, if there's huge suffering, like really big suffering, that's really difficult and like overwhelming, then we might really have to titrate ourselves, like only let in little bits at the same time and then go back to something more neutral or pleasant. Or we might need, you know, professional help even if it's really big. It's not always wise to fully open right away to the largest, biggest suffering that we can experience that's in our consciousness. It's, you know, we need to also be wise about what we can handle, what we can open to. And wisdom does not make us immune to suffering, of course. It just allows us to deal with it in a more supportive and balanced way. And sometimes, like what I said, sometimes wisdom can help us to see when it's appropriate to close our hearts temporarily, maybe, and ensure our own safety. That's what I was also alluding to with the really big things. And so this heart filled with compassion and wisdom not only opens to the suffering, to all the difficulties in life, but it also seeks to alleviate it. And it can really be beautiful to do that. It can really be this strong motivator to leave the world better than we found it. And if we can't, like as I was talking earlier, if we can't alleviate the suffering, then this wisdom part can help us to open to the suffering regardless of that. So without losing our balance, without losing our sense of centeredness, and without drowning in the suffering. So there, those two, wisdom and compassion, are really these two wings of the same bird. And it's really important to cultivate both so we don't fly crooked. And they say that if we have compassion but no wisdom, and then we might degenerate into pity. And pity is kind of the near enemy of compassion. If we feel pity, then we also suffer ourselves. Basically, we suffer with the person. You know, at times might be good, but that's not real compassion. Compassion is a balanced way, and compassion usually feels good. It feels wholesome. And we're not like in the suffering. We open to it, but we're not in it. It's not that we are suffering when we feel compassion. And wisdom without compassion, so this was compassion without wisdom, degenerating into pity, but wisdom without compassion may result in kind of an indifference to the world, indifference to the suffering in the world. Yeah, so compassion can be cultivated towards others, obviously, but it can also be cultivated towards ourselves. And this self-compassion is something that we as Westerners often really, really need. We are so harsh for ourselves, so hard on ourselves. And we all go through these difficult moments of, you know, things in our life happening, or even just these inner voices, this inner critic or self-judgment that might happen. And compassion for ourselves might be really beneficial at those times. Because often we, when others, like if our friends tell us like, oh, you know, I'm such a awful person, or, you know, then we say, no, you know, you're perfectly fine the way you are, and don't be so harsh on yourself. But when we say it to ourselves, we kind of believe it. So self-compassion practice can really help with those kind of inner voices that we have. And there's this scientist, Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F. She's done a lot of research on self-compassion. It's really beautiful. And she shows, her research shows that self-compassion has this really healing effect on our lives. And she points to three components of self-compassion. The first is being kind to ourselves. Second is understanding shared humanity. And the last is mindfulness. And broken down like that, it might not be so difficult. And the kindness is about, you know, being kind and caring and loving for ourselves rather than harsh and judgmental. And it might sound, you know, easier than it is though. but what can sometimes help is to really acknowledge the harshness, self-judgment, and then have a moment of kindness, like bring in on purpose a moment of kindness towards ourselves. Like, it's okay, you know, it's okay, darling. It's, you know, however kind of word would fits for you. And there's this teacher, James Barras, who suggests to put a hand on your cheek and say like, it's okay. You're like a kind of this care and kindness for yourself like that. And then the shared humanity is also pretty powerful, because it's like realizing that we're not the only person like with this specific issue, let's say self-judgment, or, you know, if it's grief, losing someone, or, you know, going through some major life event or whatever it is, like there's like people all around the world that go through something similar. Like, we were 9 billion people in this planet, so there's always others who experience something similar than we are experiencing. So we can say like, yeah, this is being human. This is what humanness is like, which can be, you know, really helpful. Like, people all around the world make mistakes, all have imperfect lives. And then the third one was the mindfulness, third aspect of self-compassion. And this points to that we basically need mindfulness to recognize what's happening. You know, we have to recognize that there's suffering present, that there's self-judgment present, or grief, or whatever it is. So if we don't recognize that, then, you know, there's no developing of self-compassion. It's kind of a basic need, yeah. And Kristen Neff, she has many self-compassion exercises on her website if you're interested. And talking about exercises, in Buddhism, there's also an exercise for compassion. And this is the compassion practice that is basically the same as the other Brahmavihara practices that I've discussed before, and that we've been doing the metta here at the end of the evening usually, or very short metta usually. But it's just like the other Brahmaviharas. There are phrases that we can use, kind of like these wishes that we can have for ourselves and others. And I'll give some examples. I care about your suffering, or I care about my suffering. May you or I have the strength to face your or mine suffering. May you or I be free from suffering. May you or I be calm and peaceful. So those are some examples. But just like with the other Brahma Viharas, we can be creative. So we're, you know, we can come up with our own phrases or change these phrases up a little bit so that it resonates better for us. And then, so just like with metta, you'll bring to mind this person or being, whether it's yourself or someone else. And then you direct the phrases to this person from your heart space. And often the easiest category, like all the Brahma Viharas have their own easiest category. And for compassion, it is the person that is close to you, someone who's close to you, who you know is suffering, dear friend or benefactor, or family member. And then traditionally seen, the order is after this person that's close, who is suffering, will practice compassion for ourselves, and then a benefactor, a neutral person, a difficult person, and then all living beings. So if we do some metta here at the end of the evening, then we usually just do one or two categories of beings, so we can't go through all of them. And also I mentioned that compassion has this near enemy of pity. It also has a far enemy, and a far enemy means that what is opposed to compassion, and that is cruelty, or the desire to harm others. And obviously none of us probably wants to be cruel, you know, consciously it wants to harm others or other beings, but we probably all have a little bit of a tendency at times, and when we do the practice, this can come up, especially when we progress to more difficult beings. Then it might come up that we actually want to harm this being instead of, you know, alleviate their suffering. like it's, you know, you deserve to, you know, suffer or whatever. That kind of feelings can arise. And so just to name that, that's, you know, part of the practice, that's part of our humanness also. And how we deal with that is to just be aware of these tendencies and to know that this is the purification process going on. Just like with the other Brahma Viharas, it's kind of purifying our heart. So we can just use the Vipassana meditation, or we can switch to an easier being that doesn't, you know, make those feelings of cruelty arise, and then practice the compassion with an easier being first, and slowly but steadily go to more difficult beings. Like all of the Brahma Viharas are really about where, you know, go where it's easy, so we don't have to make it difficult for ourselves. That's kind of an important aspect of this practice. And it's maybe good to mention that it, you know, the practice needs a lot of patience. You know, these kind of things come up, and it just takes a while. It's a gradual process. But every time we practice it, we're cultivating these seeds of compassion. We're planting the seeds and we're cultivating them. So, and at some point, our practice will turn into this beautiful flower of compassion. And I want to end with this very pithy statement by Sharon Salzberg. And she says, "Compassion doesn't mean we don't fight. It means we don't hate.